Hello and welcome to episode 255 of Cincinnata, the Bengals UK podcast. My name is Paul Hirons and I am on my Todd today because Nathan is on his way back from glorious Italia, where he's been celebrating Parma's promotion from Serie B back up to Serie A after a while, actually. So he's currently naked, running naked through the streets of Parma. I'm expecting a call from the local carabinieri explaining to me that one of my staff is disgracing himself and is now locked up in a cell naked, apart from a clutching a bottle of Manabria and wearing a Parma scarf. So congratulations to Parma. And that's the football team, not Nathan, obviously. But it is over here. It's Bank Holiday Monday, which basically, to all our American listeners, means that it's a state holiday. We get a day off on a Monday. How cool is that? We got another one in May and another one in August. And goodness me, the sun has been out for some of us. And it's been a lovely long weekend. And also over here, it's the end, pretty much the end of the soccer season. And I think Bill Belichick, in the roast of Tom Brady, called our relegation promotion system some, what is it, obscure regulations or something like that. Well, it'll be your arse, Bill. It's we would argue that relegation and promotion is far more fun and interesting than just having nothing to play for at the end of the season. But anyway, we won't go down that road today. But it is, you know, with relegation and promotion means that there are playoffs to either stay in, well, we don't actually, but to go up to a new division. And certainly my local amateur team, the guys that I support, Leamington FC, We won a playoff final today, so we go up. Hooray! Congratulations to the Brakes! Up the Brakes! I know that some of our American friends are big Leicester City supporters, and they, of course, have won the championship. So they go up automatically back into the Premier League. I know some people who are Everton fans out there in Cincinnati. They've survived for another season, when it looked as though relegation was on the cards. So basically what I'm trying to say is it's been squeaky bum time over here. Lots of things happening sport-wise, but we're getting to the end of the season and it's all good fun and games. So today, well, yes, I am on my Todd, but not completely, because I mentioned a few weeks back that we were going to bring back our British Bengals fans draft panel, comprised of Rory Joe Daniels, Paris Pinney and Nathan Sangara. And I'm as good as, I'm nothing if not as good as my word. And those guys will be back in a little while to talk through. It's 2 weeks now since the draft, and I wanted to get their opinions on how that draft class is looking. Now it's kind of, we've got a bit of time between now and then. Obviously, it kind of mellows any emotions. It allows you to look deeper into things and perhaps formulate a better opinion than a snap opinion that we all did at the time. So those guys will be coming up pretty soon. But a couple of things I wanted to talk to you about. It's the Monday the 6th of May, as I say. By the end of this week, the fixtures will be out. That's exciting, isn't it? Because one of those fixtures will be hosting another trip to Cincinnati back in the fall. So we, myself and the guys at Touchdown Trips, who we team with, the excellent Touchdown Trips, we will be perusing the fixture list and trying to figure out which fixtures are good. Last year we hit the bullseye, really, with a night game, that Buffalo game, that incredible experience that a lot of us, well experienced, really. It really was an incredible weekend. So we'll see what the fixture list holds. Of course, there is a chance, although the rumours suggest against it, there is a chance that the Bengals will be in Germany this year playing the Panthers. So we'll be keeping an eagle eye out for the fixtures. And of course, hopefully by the end of this month, the end of May, we'll be in a position to confirm everything: dates, prices, the game itself, which game we'll be going to go and see. So if you haven't already and you fancy going to Cincinnati, and I think you speak to anyone that has been on the trip the past few years, it has been a life changer. It's been a real bucket list sort of occasion. Doesn't really matter which game, quite frankly. We were lucky last year, but the year before we went to see the Panthers game, which we won handsomely and saw Joe Mixon score 5 touchdowns. So, do you know what I mean? Just whatever game is just a fantastic thing, because it means you're in Cincinnati. You're at a stadium where you did not think you would ever visit. For some people, it's a very emotional experience. For me, it is also, even though I've been lucky enough to been there, to have been to Cincinnati a few times now. I love it. I love the city. And that's the other thing as well. A lot of the guys, as good as that weekend was last year, as good as the game was, the night game against the Bills, as good as it was seeing Joe Burrow play, as good as it was seeing Chase play, bloody hell, people really fell in love with the city as well. So, yeah, have a look out. And if you do fancy coming along, why don't you register your interest? Why don't you? It's a good idea. touchdowntrips.com/BengalsUK. touchdowntrips.com/BengalsUK. Go and register. There's absolutely zero obligation at this stage. But it just allows you to kind of get the news first and foremost, you know, when things are starting to move, when things are confirmed later on this month. So go and register your interest and we'll see what happens. We're looking forward to it very much. News also from the Bengals themselves. They were very keen to let everyone know that Joe Burrow is well and truly back. He was initially, there were shots of him wearing a tie-dye t-shirt, once again just coming back from a 90s rave on the somewhere south of the M25 in near Orpington, I guess, from an all-night rave with his tie-dye t-shirt on and his 90s hair. Bizarrely carrying his lunchbox and a couple of protein shakes, and he looked ready to go. And then there were images of Joe Burrow throwing, and the reports from this practice session were that Joe Boy looked fantastic. He didn't skip a beat. He completed all the drills that his new quarterback coach Brad Cragthorpe set him. And some people like Mike Gesicki, who was catching passes from Joe Burrow for the first time, I guess, was very impressed with the snap and the velocity. Yoshi was even saying, yep, he's got it. He's no change there. Yep, he's back. The boy's back. Joe Boy's back. So that's really fantastic to see, because throughout this day today, we've had reports saying that one significant one on social media saying that Burrow's injury will mean that he's never going to be the same again in terms of throwing the ball. Now, we'll see, obviously, but it's certainly, I think the Bengals were quite keen to allay those internet doctor reports, shall we say, by some video footage showing that Burrow was throwing the ball with good snap, good velocity. So it's great to see him back, and that's what you want. That is what you want to see. Really fantastic. We're expecting more stuff throughout the week, and of course we've only got I think we've got a rookie minicamp on Friday the 10th, which I think is just one day actually. So we'll see. It'd be good to see all the rookies in the building. Be good to see them all in uniforms running about, and it's always a fun time, I think, getting to know our guys, you know. Great to see people like Chris Jenkins and McKinley Jackson and Josh Newton, you know, the big personality guys, really, really take to it. You know, looks really good. So that's fantastic. Another thing that's been exercising Bengals' fans' brains this week is this kind of this whole kind of field logo thing, the midfield. What logo to have on the midfield? They've obviously got a new turf is being laid at the moment. There's been some improvements throughout the stadium, but one of them has been new turf, and it seemed like a good opportunity to perhaps go back to the Flying Tiger, to perhaps go back to the Tiger head of the early 2000s. People don't love the B, the Bengals B. I don't, as a midfield logo, I don't mind it. I actually don't like the leaping. No, I say don't like it. It's my least favourite option, the leaping tiger, I have to say. And of course, this is all subjective. But I mean, it would have been, you know, Elizabeth and the front office are so good now at seizing potential marketing opportunities. I was a bit surprised they didn't go for something new, perhaps. Something a bit different, but no, they stuck to the Bengals B, and I can see why. It's a pretty, I mean, it does what it says on the tin, right? It's a B, and the Bengals, you know, name starts with a B. The B has got tiger stripes in, so, you know, it's instantly identifiable, which is what you want as a brand, I guess. It's just a bit dull, perhaps, a bit uninspired, a bit not very innovative. So, yeah, it was interesting. And they also missed the opportunity, I think, not to give Jermaine Burton the number three shirt, because that would have been perfect, wouldn't it? The 513, Higgins, Chase, and then Jermaine Burton. That would have been perfect. And again, I'm surprised that Elizabeth and the team, so on it in terms of marketing opportunities, they didn't go for that. But we had an absolutely, I would say, easy fix for this midfield logo thing. I mean, we suggested putting the phrase "fuck the Steelers" in enormous letters on the midfield area. I think that would have been an easy fix that pretty much everyone could have got behind, really. So yeah, but you know, it is the off season. If this is what we're talking about now, midfield logos and an opportunity to get the 513, you know that we're starved of content. You know that we're starved of football. But hopefully new narratives will emerge this week. We're going to be hearing a lot. I think we're hearing from Borough actually tomorrow. That's Tuesday the 7th. You probably, by the time you listen to this, he will have already spoken. So it'd be great to hear from him. It will be great to see the rookies in action at the end of the week. And of course, the fixture list is coming out towards the end of this week, so we can't wait. And next week's episode should be a lot of fun, where me and Nathan will go through the fixtures, no doubt. Right, I'll stop blabbering on, because I have some friends waiting in the green room.
I pull up my pen, now hear me well. Gonna ask your folks. Forgive that lightning, ring the bell. You know you want to. You know you want to.
And here we go. It's a pleasure to bring back the guys. The boys are back in town. Our Bengals UK British Bengals fan draft panel, and I'm delighted to say that Paris Pinney, Nathan Sangara, and Rory Joe Daniels are back with us. Guys, how you doing? Rory, good evening to you first and foremost.
Yeah, good, fantastic, just getting you back into the swing of things now. Everything's settled down after the draft, so getting to know the new guys.
Are you, because of course you write for the Touchdown, don't you? And the draft is your speciality, I would say. Do you feel a bit bereft now? You put so much work into the build-up of the draft and now it's all over. Where's your mind at? Where's your head at? Do you feel kind of empty inside now?
It's quite funny, really, because the last sort of week in the build-up to the draft, you kind of get edgy and you kind of start looking, you sort of, everything's, the hair's in the barn, and you start looking at 2025. and sort of looking for those guys. So I've started on defensive players.
You've
so
started already on the 2025 draft. Yeah. Okay. And what does that mean? When you say started, what does that mean? What does that mean?
The start of this process really is to sort of get on top of maybe a loose top 50 going into the summer, do some summer scouting articles, and then hopefully build a sort of positional top fives over summer as well before the college season ramps up. So that's hopefully where we'll get to by sort of midsummer.
You are keen as mustard, and God bless you for it, Rory. Go and see Rory's work on The Touchdown. I'm not sure. What's the URL? TheTouchdown.com or something like that, Rory?
Yeah, I think it's thetouchdown.co.uk, I think.
Okay. Well, yeah. Go and read Rory's stuff. Actually, Simon and the crew over there do a fantastic job. So go and read The Touchdown. Nathan, how are you doing? We spoke very briefly offline. As we mentioned before I brought you guys on, Joe Burrow back throwing. How does that make you feel? It must be for Bengals fans, it's a great sight.
100%, really good to see. Obviously, we figured from all the general real reports that have been coming out over the last several months that he seems to be on schedules, and the fact that he's turning up to the workouts that happen at the moment and actually throwing the ball with some of the clips that have been shown, it's not a more positive sign. It's just, obviously, it's early stages because we know what's happened in previous off-seasons and pre-seasons with Joe, so let's just hope that he can actually make through without any major hiccups, touch wood.
Here. And Paris, Penny. Paris, how you doing, mate? Good to see you and hear from you again. How are you feeling now? 2 weeks removed from the draft. Again, we mentioned off-air that the news cycle is such that it almost feels like a distant memory. Does it feel like a distant memory to you, or are you excited still about who we've drafted and getting to know the guys, I guess? That's the process now, right?
Yeah, well, like Rory said, I mean, I listened to a podcast earlier and they're already talking about 2025, so it's almost feel like it's moved on, really. I was talking about, you know, how many edge rushers are going to be in next year's draft, how many quarterbacks, so... Yeah, it's almost slipped by already now after all that work that we put in.
And also, who are we going to be picking with a 32nd pick in next year's draft, right?
Well, exactly. I was going to ask you, Rory, if you're starting to do mock drafts now, where have you got the Bengals picking and why is it not 32, basically?
There will be 100% 32 in all my mock drafts from this point onwards.
Unless we trade up. Could trade up from there.
Exactly. Maybe. As I mentioned earlier, I thought it'd be cool to bring back these guys just to go over, because we spoke to you and Pete Danswell, of course, a couple of weeks in the build-up to the draft. And I just wanted to get your reactions, really. Now, a couple of you guys were good enough to come on to Good Morning Bengals. So you've already had your say. But again, it's 2 weeks removed from the draft. It's a time to try to really kind of... digest what's happened. Rory, I'll come to you because we didn't hear from you on Good Morning Bengals. What was your snap decision, or sorry, reaction to the guys that we drafted? All 10 of them. We didn't do any wheeling or a dealing. We stuck and puck. No, that doesn't work. we sticked and picked, and that doesn't work grammatically either. Anyway, but you know what I mean. We selected the full 10 people, which surprised me. What about you? Was that the big surprise for you, or what were your thoughts?
I thought there would be some movement around the board, but obviously the Bengals' history says that we're sort of not that team really to do it. I thought they might have packaged to the two threes and maybe moved up for somebody in round two, but overall, I've come to like the draft class more as time's gone on. I think initially I was a bit wary of it. And I think it surprised me because a lot of the Zach Taylor stuff and to this point has all been very safe, very buttoned up prospects. Whereas this draft felt like we're going to take some big swings and go for guys with injury histories, obviously character concerns, maybe with Jermaine Burton. So I was quite surprised in that sense that a few of the picks, Eric Hall with the injury history, Tanner McLaughlin and the double dip at tight end surprised me. So overall, I'd say, there was plenty of things that were a bit eyebrow raising. But I'm comfortable with it as a whole.
And you mentioned that you were wary of the draft. And the things that you mentioned, the character concerns, specifically Burton the injury history to Mims and to the two tight end guys. That was what was making you wary?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's just a combination of it. The fact that it was so many picks. If you take one or two of those guys out of 10 picks, whereas it seemed like having four or five that all had some sort of injury, or obviously the Mims thing, I'm more comfortable with Mims in terms of I can see the high upside, I can see the potential, but also limited game time. Plus, it's that 6'8" frame. It sort of makes you feel like it must be difficult to maintain that to the standard. I know these little tweaks, and I'm just worried that these soft tissue injuries could build up. So that was the kind of thing I was worried about with that. But yeah, it's just, I think to have so many that have a bit of a little red sticker on them, it was a surprise to me.
And how do you feel now, 2 weeks removed? Are you more comfortable with the class as we look at it today?
I think I am. I am more comfortable with it because I can see the upside with obviously Eric Hall, and they've obviously decided that the tight end thing can't quite continue like it was, getting a veteran in on a 1 year deal as a sticking plaster. It worked with Hurst, but whether or not the Irv Smith experience perhaps put them off doing that, and they thought, no, we need to future proof this thing. But for me, I think the areas that I was most worried about was, I think cornerback wasn't addressed quite as high as I would have liked it to be addressed. And I don't think the interior of the offensive line, I thought this was quite a strong group of interior offensive linemen. So I don't think they attacked that early enough. I know they got Matt Lee late on. But those were two areas that I would have liked to have seen addressed a bit earlier. But the upside of it, hey, if we get five or six guys out of this class that can start or play a part, then you can't argue with it.
I was again shocked, because you have your guys leading into the draft, don't you? And then you sort of forget about them as the draft goes on because you're so concentrating on the Bengals, right? And then occasionally you'll see sort of tweets from other teams or other fans or whatever, kind of saying, oh, look, we look at our new player. It's like, oh, man, it's him. He went to that team. I forgot about that guy. And Cedric Van Pran was one of those guys. And it's like, oh, my God, he went to Buffalo. Bastards. You know, because he went and round five as well. So, you know, there was immense value there, I think. And that sort of plugs into your argument about interior offensive line, doesn't it, Rory? Nathan, I'm going to go around now and ask you your favourite picks. So let's start with you, Nathan. Who are your favourite picks out of the whole lot? Have you got some?
I've got two. It's hard to pick between them, and it's actually the first and last ones.
Right.
I think purely for value, I would say Matt Lee, just because from what a lot of the scan reports, I saw a little bit of him as well. I figured early day three type, getting him in this mid to late seventh, I think that's just a bargain of a draft. But then obviously with the conversation we had before the draft and just the lot of the profile, I was massively high on Mims going into it. So the fact that when we picked him, because I wasn't so worried necessarily, especially when we got on the clock, I thought that it was hard to make a bad pick, but I was like, I was pulling for Mims or Mitchell to be the pick. And when Mims got called, I was really, really happy, because I just thought, for me, just in terms of size, I think like more athletic Orlando Brown, like at minimum. So I think if you get Orlando Brown's career out of him, I think you take that with the 18th pick. And obviously I feel like he could do even more than that, but having that as a baseline, I think, is a good place to start. I have a few less concerns with the fact that he hasn't played a lot, and some of the injury stuff seems quite minor. It's not, I don't think he's had any massive ones, so long may that continue. So hopefully he can be a massive hit with us and protect Burrow for years to come. So
massive in every single sense. He's a big boy, isn't he? And he's super stacked as well. He's not like he's a big Andre Smith sort of, you know, belly hanging out or whatever. It's really, there's a lot of muscle going on there. So he's a frightening prospect, isn't he? If he can, you know, extend or amplify that very small sample size, he looks like a Rolls Royce, as we all know on the tape that he did provide. But I guess it's kind of whether that's translating to the NFL week in, week out. You want that consistency week in, week out. But we'll soon see. Paris, what about you, man? Have you got any favourite picks that really excite you?
Yeah, I mean, Chris Jenkins and Jermaine Burton for me. I mean, Chris Jenkins just lights up the room. You know, you look at his interviews, when he holds court with, you know, the reporters, etc. He's just a great character. I think within, you know, 2 or 3 years, I can definitely see him being a captain in that defensive room. And I think, you know, he's got upside as well, not only as a rusher, you know, rush defender, but also as a pass rusher. And Jermaine Burton, I think the sky's the limit with him. Obviously, you've got the character concerns, but I just think he's going to flourish in this Bengals offense. And if he can sit and learn behind T and Jamar and, you know, Joe get him under his wing, I think, you know, he's got borderline, you know, wide receiver one potential.
I mean, I said on last week's pod, it's not just the receivers that he's joining. Joe Burrow's not going to stand for any nonsense, is he? He's got that sort of, you know, from what you hear, he doesn't say much, but when he does, it's, you know, people take notice. And if he gives you the look of death, then you know that it's trouble. And I just get the impression that Burrow's going to demand excellence from him in any kind of slip from that moment. But I agree. I am with you, actually. The more I think about it, the more I'm a bit worried about Burton, but I am excited by him after watching some clips of him in action. Bloody hell, he's got loads of potential, hasn't he? And he's quick, he's smooth, he's got, as you say, wide receiver. He's not as big as T, but not many people are at wide receiver. So, excited, really excited by the potential of Jermaine Burton. Let's go around again, and conversely, who was the pick that you weren't, you know, as excited? We obviously, we preface this by saying we want everyone to succeed. There are guys now, but who were the guys that you kind of thought, I'm not sure about him? I think actually that might turn out to be not a poor pick, but a misjudgment. Nathan, what about you first?
Probably the one that's most commonly sort of said, I'd say, is probably McKinley Jackson. But at the same time, I do at least get it. So, like, they kind of needed a nose tackle type. Like, he's not going to be DJ Reader, I highly doubt anyone. I mean, you never know, I suppose, it could turn out to be that. And I don't think it's maybe as bad as a pick as I thought when it first happened. So, on hindsight, it's not that bad. Still think it's a little...
What was that, Nathan? Was it because of value? Was it because of need over talent? What's going on with you?
I think that's why they picked him, is because Sweat went really early, like even earlier than I thought. I thought after what happened a few weeks back, there was no way he was going to go early second, and he went early second to the Titans. So there was like, well, I think they didn't have too many nose tackles rated fairly highly, and he was probably the main guy they were looking at. And there's like, this is essentially a bonus pick we got from losing Bates. Let's use it and get our maybe future nose tackle. But yeah, that was my main concern, is that I just figured he'd probably be like a early to mid day three level. But again, you just never know with these things. That for all we know, he could end up being a future starting nose tackle for us. So it's hard to tell. Obviously, it's early days. But just at the time, I just thought a little bit early. I thought maybe you could use that that pick, because it's a valuable day two pick on someone a bit more impactful. But again, I think when you take the whole draft into consideration, I don't actually think it's that bad of a pick. So I'm okay with it. But I would have rather someone else at the time.
Rory, how do you feel about me? Before we get to your kind of least favourite pick, shall we say, what do you think about McKinley Jackson? There's been lots of debate about whether the Bengals had kind of backed themselves into a bit of a corner by, you know, not necessarily by letting DJ go, but not being perhaps as proactive as they could have been in re-signing, if you believe all the reports. Did they back themselves into a corner whereby they had to take, and you know, remember there was a bit of a run on defensive tackles in that third round, so the quality was fast running out there. What was your version? And again, there was lots of people kind of arguing that this was a poor pick in terms of value. What was your take on the McKinley Jackson pick?
Like Nathan said, they were sort of in a situation where they had to make a move at that position, and I do think it is a slight poor planning, in a sense that obviously I don't have a problem with them moving on from Reader. If they do, the money that it took for the Lions to sign Reader makes me feel like they weren't comfortable with the injury, that they thought that was going to be a problem signing him to a 2-year deal or whatever. So to me, that sounds like you need to make a move in free agency. But the defensive tackle market got out of hand quite quickly in free agency. There's big money flying around, and it sort of left him in a tricky situation. And then obviously the Tavondre sweat also, that led into it because they were linked so heavily to him. And the fact that then it felt like, well, we can't take him high, but then the Titans did anyway. And he was the only true sort of nose tackle that was on the board that was going to sort of be an elite, class as an elite nose tackle. And then McKinley Jackson was really the next one, and there wasn't much else. So I don't disagree with them taking him with that. They see that pick as an extra. It was a comp pick, so it's not actually like a true pick, whether that makes a difference or not. But I would have had him in the fourth round anyway. And if you need that position, then why not just take him with that pick? I think he'll do a job. And I think the fact that they took Chris Jenkins reassured me a little bit, because it meant that we are seeing McKinley Jackson as a two-down player in certain situations, rather than expecting him to come in and do a lot, because Jenkins is going to be in that group as well. So double dipping like that, give him a bit of protection, I think, to be able to go and take Jackson slightly higher than the league viewed him, but maybe not how we felt we valued him.
And what about your least favourite pick?
It's difficult, really. There's not a lot. I mean, once you get down to the seventh round, you're nitpicking, aren't you? But obviously, Dejon Anthony, in terms of the amount of numbers we've got in the safety group, that's all, really. But I know they were linked with him. I think he came for a visit. It kept being a name that you saw on lists linked to us, and then you kept thinking, well, safety, why are we looking at safeties again? So he obviously made a real impact on him. They were really keen on him, which makes you think he's probably the right type of person to have in the building as a potential special teams character. But for me, there was a lot of depth still knocking around in the interior offensive line, and I might have been tempted to take a corner later on just to stack that group and let them compete, because I'm not sure the corner group is... I think it's going to be quite wide open in training camp.
Paris, what about you? Who was your least favourite pick, would you say?
Well, yeah, I mean, the obvious one is McKinley Jackson, isn't it, really? I mean, you know, as you say, as you get towards the back end of the draft, you know, it's dart throws, really. As I said, it's hard, you know, you're looking special teams, you know, backroom contributors. Yeah, I mean, as we've discussed, I just wish, you know, there was Mahogany, there was Cedric Van Pran, there's lots of, you know, interior O-line and they could have grabbed, you know, in the fifth or sixth round. And I wish they'd gone that direction rather than going for, you know, rotational edge or, you know, safety that might be a special team. I just wish they'd done that, really. But
that goes back to using the whole 10 picks, right? Because yeah. how are some of these guys going to get onto the roster? That's the question, isn't it? So is it kind of a waste? Is it quantity more so than quality in this draft? I mean, obviously time will tell. We hope that it's not, and we wish them all well. But I struggle to see how, you know, a Cedric Johnson or a Dejon Anthony will make the roster. You know, I might struggle to see if both of those tight ends make the roster. Do you know what I mean? This year,
I think maybe the tight end thing could be done, because I don't know how far Eric Hall is coming back from his injury, but there's a chance he may start on the
pup
list,
which might help Callum
McLaughlin.
That'd be the one best.
What did you think of that tight end double dip, Paris?
I mean, it's weird, isn't it? You know, after all these years of ignoring it, they do 2-1 draft, you know. And especially, well,
a bit like the linebacker position a few years back with Logan Wilson and Jimmy Pratt, right?
Exactly. Well, like last year was meant to be actually the deeper tight end draft, and they didn't take any. And this year they take two. So it's like, but yeah, I mean, obviously Eric Hall, huge potential. He could be a real tight end one further down the line. It's just his injury history, isn't it? And obviously Tanner, you know, McLaughlin, he's a bit of an older prospect, but, you know, he's shown he's really, you know, got good potential as a receiver. So let's see how camp shakes out, I guess.
Yeah, a lot of people had McLaughlin above Eric Hall on their big boards, didn't they? And I certainly, for what it's worth, probably nothing, but every big board that I used on my mock drafts had Eric Hall like sixth or seventh round, you know?
Yeah.
And so that felt early to me. But I mean, again, you know, they went out, they met the guy. He's a local kid, isn't he? So what's not to like? And like you say, he's got the tools, isn't he? The physical tools. It's just he's had some horrific injuries in the past couple of years. So, Rory, in terms of impact, if you speak to Andrew Dockrell, he was a bit sort of miffed by this draft because he was all about maximising the window and getting impact players. Now, whoever you select in the draft, it's a bit of a crapshoot, isn't it? You hope that, like you mentioned earlier, the Bengals have been known recently for taking quite safe picks, for whatever that means, safe picks, as in guys that you would imagine to have pretty stable backgrounds, pretty stable injury, good talent, good measurables, all the rest of it. But Andrew thought that this year we went for too many sort of projects that wouldn't make an impact this year. And the Bengals have in recent years drafted for the year after, if that makes sense. So Myles Murphy, you know, not expected to do much as a rookie, but perhaps this year and certainly next year when you would imagine Hendrickson's going to go, you know, he might come into his own there. So it's kind of grooming them and teaching them all the ropes for maybe a year or so down the line, right? So I want to know about impact. Who do you think, which of these 10 players, and we're not going to touch undrafted free agent, we might do a little bit later, but which of these guys do you think will make the most impact in year one? Difficult question.
I think Chris Jenkins, to be honest, I think it'll work really well to have him in there with BJ Hill. I think they asked a lot of BJ Hill last year and we lost some of his impact because we overloaded him with snaps. And I think putting Jenkins into the rotation with Rankins, I know they're all similar. I think they'll use them slightly differently to how we saw it used with Reader. I think you have to, because Reader's sort of a very difficult player to replicate anyway. So they are going to have to change the style. But I like Jenkins. I watched him actually in a spring game last year and I thought he was going to explode this last season because he just looked so twitchy. And he never quite hit those heights, even though obviously he's got a national championship to show for it. So, you know, he was good. And then I've been watching the guy that plays next to him, Mason Graham, for next year. But Jenkins does splash. And he, when you go back and watch it again, and now I see him as a Bengal, you watch the tape a little bit differently. And yeah, he's there. He's high motor, he's high effort. And I just think it'll add it in there. I think they'll end up probably playing him more than a lot of people expect. And he might not stack up loads of sacks or whatever, but I think we'll see the difference in being able to stop the run and having an impact somewhat in the passing game. So yeah, he'd be my pick for somebody that will come in and I think he'll surprise everybody. And we'll be glad, obviously, like I think Paris was saying, is the way he holds himself and the way he talks to the media is fantastic. So I think we're all going to really enjoy Chris Jenkins.
Yeah, I think you're right. He's already nailed on sort of leader of the locker room, isn't he? He's a big character. He's really amusing and good fun and the energy he brings. That's a good shout. And it's going to be really interesting to see how Lou handles his new recruits and how he deals with the scheme and whether there's going to be some changes there. And I agree absolutely with BJ Hill. You could say that about DJ Reader as well. They played too many snaps, the pair of them. And that says everything about the depth behind them and the trust that they had in the depth behind them. You know, Zach Carter, unfortunately, has not done a thing. I do wonder whether they'll move him back out to more of a, you know, a more of a hybrid end defensive tackle sort of guy. So it's going to be really, really interesting. And I think BJ Hill has earned. I think he's actually a really good player, BJ Hill, that goes under the radar and does a terrific job, but he can't do it all on his own. And it's going to be interesting to see whether Jenkins and Jackson, because it doesn't look as though Josh Tupou is going to be re-signed at the moment. So, which surprised me, actually. I thought they'd bring him back. There's still time to bring him back, obviously. But yeah, very interesting. Paris, who's the one that you think that will make an impact straight away? Or at least this season.
I think Jermaine Burton. I think if he's got his head screwed on, he could come in and be the wide receiver three almost immediately. And obviously, you know, Charlie Jones, you know, Yoshi might develop a bit more. But I think he could come in straight away. And I mean, he's not going to get a whole load of yards with obviously Higgins and Chase in the offense. But, you know, maybe he gives you 600-700 yards, 7-8 touchdowns, maybe something like that.
Wow. As a rookie. If that happens, that would be fantastic, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Are you excited about that room now? We're a bit, you know, still all over the place. Who knows what's going to happen with T this off season? I think he will eventually end up lining up as a Bengal in September. But I mean, the summer we might not see a whole lot of T Higgins, I don't think, you know. So we've got to be prepared for that. But does the wide receiver room excite you now? You know, we've got, like you mentioned, Yoshi, who had a really solid rookie season. Charlie Jones kind of had a few splashes, but we obviously want to see a lot more from him. Trent and Irwin, you know what you're going to get. Obviously, TB looks as though he's going to sign with the Titans. That was the last I heard. But it, I mean, the fact that Jermaine Burton has been given the number 83, I mean, that's as bigger confirmation as you need that Tyler Boyd is no longer a Bengal after sort of
I think he
six,
was given
eight,
80.
seven, 8 years.
I think he was given 81.
Oh, was he 81?
Yeah,
Someone, one of the
I think
tight ends, Eric Hall, I think maybe.
Eric Hall, I think, got 83,
Yeah,
but
sorry, I
he's
beg your
gone
pardon.
anyways. But yeah,
Yeah,
I think
yeah,
he's
yeah.
back.
So, I mean, well, how does that? How do you feel about that wide receiver room now?
I think it's in a good place still. I think you should. They always say, you know, you should always draft a receiver every draft, they say, at least one receiver every year. So obviously, you know, you've got Burton to replace almost Tyler Boyd, but I think if T just plays out the string this year, you're gonna have to draft another wide receiver probably on day two again next year, I think. But in terms of this season, I think the room's in a good place.
Nathan, how about you? Who do you think might provide the biggest impact from this rookie class this year?
Yeah, see, it's tricky because I do agree with the guys that those two would be pretty good shouts. I do also like what the versatility that Burton gives, and I think it's going to allow Chase to play in the slot more because I think Burton can play both. And I think that's maybe what we're missing by having Boyd the last few years is that he can play outside, I guess, but he's not brilliant at it. And I feel like Burton's more suited to play on the outside than Boyd was, and there could be similar levels in the slot. So getting Chase, moving him around, I think it's going to make our offense a lot more difficult to watch. And I think what we were saying earlier about Chris Jenkins, I mean, I think it makes sense. Like, technically, we're probably worse at starting at the room, but I actually think we're deeper now, and I think that's actually going to benefit us. Because also, I think that having Jenkins, who's currently better against the run, I think will sort of help with some of that issue we're having when Reader was out last year, and hopefully McKinley-Jackson will be similar. I don't know. It's if I go for a different answer, again, it's a weird one to say, but I might even say Mims again because number one, I think that they can have a bit more versatility in using 6-0 linemen, and I think he's going to be the first guy off the bench and going to be a problem for defenses. And I am expecting almost that Trent Brown's going to miss a decent amount of time. And I think because he's on a 1-year deal, and I do have a lot of belief that Mims is going to be a franchise right tackle, he could take that job and not look back when he gets it. Obviously, it's not a guarantee, but I feel like it's possible that he's so good when he does come in, let's say, I don't know, week 10, week 11, or somewhere like that, when Trent Brown hopefully doesn't, but if he does get an injury, then by the time Trent Brown comes back, he's like, well, sorry, Mims is just that good. You can be the swing tackle for the rest of the year, and he's going to be dominant there. So if it's not going to be the two, because I probably would have gone for the ones that the guy suggested, I think that they were probably the two best picks. But thinking outside of that, I would have maybe said Eric Hall, but you just don't know with the injuries. But if he can stay healthy, him too. But I would probably go with Mims because I can still think you can use him a little bit early on. But I think eventually I do have the belief that he can become the starter as soon as this year. And I think that will be massive to have three tackles rather than when we had 2 years ago when we had a 3-0 lineman out and we were just down to backup. So having that extra depth is going to help too. So I think that's going to be a big thing for us.
Yeah, as a swing tackle, Mims sort of beats out Jackson Carman and Deontay Smith, really. I think Paris, you wanted to come in there.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's a bit of an upgrade, isn't it, from those two. So yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
hopefully Matt Lee will be an upgrade on Trey Hill as well.
Well, that's it. That's the hope because Trey hasn't really. These are so disappointing. I had hopes for Deontay Smith and Trey Hill, but they just haven't kicked on, haven't they? And certainly Jackson Carman has to go down as a pretty, you know. I mean, those, you know, Deontay Smith and Trey Hill were kind of lower round, kind of, you know,
Dart
darts at the
throws.
dartboard. Yeah, you know, dart throws. They hit fantastic. If they don't, you know, you've had a go, but Jackson Carman is a second rounder. That wasn't that's going to go down as a pretty poor pick, really, I think. Although he did have that spectacularly good game against Buffalo in the snow. Do you remember that? When he came in and played ever so well. So he can do it. It's just, I don't know, it seems mentally with him. He just doesn't get it, does he, really? Anyway, guys, listen, we're going to leave it there. Thank you so much for coming on again before the draft and letting us know how you're feeling about the draft post-draft as well. Rory, we shall let you go and beaver away at the 2025 prospects, and Paris and Nathan will no doubt be in touch during the season. Thanks a lot for joining us, and it's great to see you all again. Cheers, guys. That was great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
Do you want to know a secret?
Go on.
I've got Chris Jenkins for the pod next week.
Oh, that's going to be
All being well.
Excellent. So,
you never know. These people, you know, these things have a habit of... I don't want to... That's why I keep quiet, because I don't want to jinx anything.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course.
I've been told it's a strong possibility. So
fantastic,
because I kind of said, look, you know, we'll go for like a lower round guy. Don't really care, and you know, one of the Cedric Johnson, one of the tight ends, whoever would be really cool. But I said if I had a main choice, it would be Chris Jenkins. But I'm sure everyone wants a piece of Chris Ed Jenkins, and he said, no, we can get him for you. So
that's awesome.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. That'd be fun, wouldn't it? But
Actually, quick question, Rory. So you mentioned actually during the conversation that you started getting a look on 2025 already. But I'm assuming you'd probably done similar last year. Did Josh Newton, was he a guy that you'd noticed really early? Because I think going into the year, I heard a lot of things about him being a first round guy. So I don't know if you heard him mentioned, because I think he was in the college football championship game, wasn't he, with TCU? So I'm wondering if he's a guy you sort of knew about at that point, or.
Yeah, he'd come across, he was in some, I think he was in like back end of first round mocks, couple of, because is he a fifth round? I want to say he's like a fifth year player.
Yeah, so, he's 23.
When he could have come out in the third year, that was when he was on the radar. And then obviously he had that amazing season where they got to the final. And the fact he was such a leader as well, I think, in that group as well, like he was one of the main guys. So I think he's got a chance. Obviously, I think the testing was probably what let him down. A little bit stiff, but I think he's got a chance. He seems like a really competitive guy, doesn't he? Sort of feisty kind of guy. So I think he'll stay well.
What was that, Paul?
He's got a real personality as well, I think.
Yeah, he does. Yeah,
I heard he said he heard he cursed a ton in his interview with the Cincinnati Press and stuff when he got drafted, which sounds just from what I've seen of it, it does seem like a hilarious character. I think he's, especially because our corner depth is a bit iffy, although I guess we'll see how Dax gets on now he's moving there as well. I think between the lot of them, I think we can get pretty decent corner play this year.
Who's starting outside corner this year opposite Dax Hill or DJ Turner? What are you saying?
Okay, DJ Turner, I think.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, I honestly think that there's a chance, like, it may end up being that Dax Hill is going to be the ultimate chess piece player for this year. Like, I think it's going to turn out that in the big games, like Chiefs, anyone with a good tight end, basically, just stick him on the tight end all game. Like, as he'll probably do a pretty decent job as anyone could do covering Travis Kelce, because he's just that type of player that can sort of do that. You just say, all right, similar to how we use Trey Flowers, but a better version of it, because I think he's more athletic. Mm-hmm. So, well, maybe you're out of this, he could end up just winning the corner job altogether. But at worst case scenario, he will play a decent amount. He'll do something like that. Well, just he'll move all over, and he'll be like ultimate versatile player, I guess we'll see.
I was surprised because I saw a lot of people saying that they didn't think he had like the movement. I think it was Joe Goodberry said, "Oh, he just doesn't move like an outside corner." And I didn't see that. The problem was he was overloaded with stuff to do as a safety, and he didn't have the experience to do it, because he didn't play safety that much for Michigan. He was like a nickel corner. So I think if you tell him to man up against somebody, I think he'll actually probably benefit from that.
Yeah, I think the safety room in general was a struggle last year, because you had Nick Scott, who just wasn't really up to par, and then you had Jordan Battle, who was good, but a rookie. So it's like, and then on top of that, it's not like we had elite corners, although obviously Cam Taylor-Britt's really good, and DJ Turner started well, but it's just a generally really young secondary, and it's going from Bates and Bell to that it's just really difficult. I still believe in him. As I still thought he could potentially play safety, but obviously they've made the change now. So I think he has the traits to be able to be a top corner, but it's just a matter of whether he picks up position. Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see on it, but you know, we can hope. Subscribe, hit that bell, you see. I want to share this vibe with you and me.
Well, a huge thanks to Paris, to Rory, and to Nathan, and also to Dad, as Peter Daswell, who couldn't make tonight, but he was instrumental in our draft panel, pre-draft draft panel, if that makes sense. Those guys put a lot of work in and really enjoyed doing the draft stuff, so thank you to them. And big shout out to Simon and the crew, as Rory mentioned, at the touchdown.co.uk. They put in a lot of work and they do a really fantastic job. So go and read the Touchdown if you would like to. I'm going to leave you now because I am drinking Kraken black cherry rum and it is rather nice, and it is a Monday night and I shouldn't be drinking rum on a Monday night. However, I am, and I'm rather enjoying it. So before I get too tiddly and say things I shouldn't say, I will leave you with the news, as I mentioned earlier, that the fixture list is out at the end of the week. And that is significant because not only will we find out how many primetime games the Bengals will have, which days you will need to take off work throughout the season, which days we can breathe safely and enjoy a 6 o'clock kickoff on a Sunday evening, which days indeed, or which fixtures that we will be looking at for the next Bengals UK trip to Cincinnati. And as I mentioned earlier, please do, if you haven't already, and if you'd like to, go to touchdowntrips.com/BengalsUK, where you can sign up to or at least register your interest in this trip. Now, again, it's completely obligation free. It's just a thing where you'll get to hear about the trip first, and it's just a preliminary part of the process, really. But if you fancy it and you're intrigued, then do sign up. Nathan will be back next week. I've got to go and post bail and get him out of that Italian prison and take him some clothes so he doesn't disgrace himself on the EasyJet flight back to the UK. But yes, he will be back next week. I will be back next week. We will hopefully be having a very special guest. So do tune in. But thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the guys there talk about the draft. But it is onwards, as I mentioned. The news cycle is such that 2 weeks ago seems like 2 years ago. And we will be cracking on with some more topical stuff next week. So look out for that. And as I mentioned, thanks for listening. And it is a hoo day from me. And it should also be noted that the views and opinions expressed within this podcast do not reflect those of the Cincinnati Bengals organization.